Hi, I'm Josh, and man, I cannot wait for my kids to go back to school so I can finally have a quiet place to work.
You know, I'm Matt, and I feel like, you know, my name is biblical, so it's kind of a classic. So theoretically, were something untoward to happen to me, it would be a classic horror story.
One second, I'm gonna go. This is Charlie Dan Austin. There's a lot of great words in many languages, but I think Scheisser is like one of the best ones.
Oh, it's right up there.
It's so good. It's so good. And it was used freely and flowingly and in a wonderful sort of way in the film Blood Red Sky.
Excellent. And one of my favorite non-swear words I say when I remember not to swear in front of my kids, which is infrequent, is Shiza Manelli, which is also probably somebody's drag name, but this is Horror Show Hot Dog. First up this week, we have a short I just found out and watched called Climax. And it is a couple hearing sex noises in the room next door. And then we find out there's actually an exorcism going on in the room next door. And that's just kind of great. Like, I think you nailed it when you said if it were a second longer, it would be bad. Whichever one of you said that.
I think Matthew said that.
Yeah, I think that's... It is sort of a... I'm sorry, I'm eating pizza. It's essentially like a minute-long kind of dad joke, you know? Or like a Shaggy Dog, maybe? I don't know exactly what the right term is. But... like,
but a single gag.
Yeah, but you can see where it's going from the start, kind of. But they pull it off so well, because I think the performances are on point. It is a silly concept, and even though you can kind of see what's coming. thank you, Charlie. Like, even though you can kind of see, you know, where it's going from a mile away. It is still just kind of just fun to take that quick little journey. But yeah, if it was like 5 minutes long, this would be insufferable. But I think the fact that it's just, you're in, you're out. You know, so,
it finishes exactly when it's supposed
to.
It
comes clean right at the end. And you move on.
It goes to completion.
Yeah, no, you get full release on the premise. But
it has a happy ending, too.
It does. But, God, we're the worst people.
It's true.
I'm truly, literally hanging my head in shame. But, no, I think this is super fun. Like, I think, like, it's a little bouncy. It's a little, I don't know, what do you call it? A little quirky, but, like, you know, but also, like, it, all the craft is there. Mm-hmm. You know, like, the camera work, the cinematography, the direction, all that, the acting. So, like, it might be silly, but it's not half-assing anything. So that's always cool. So I'm into it. Yeah, I dig it.
Yeah, I'd give a thumbs up for this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does its job. But yeah, just anything longer or, well, and really this is kind of like what we talk about with, like, you know, comedy stuff a lot, where it's sort of like it's just really about timing. Like, you have to, yeah, if you sit on a lot of these, the gag of this, it's like, yeah. It just starts to become more grating than it is funny. But they really seem to get their timing down pretty well.
Yeah, their editor deserves a lot of credit, too. Because the editing is, like, on point to make sure that, like, things hit at the right moment.
Oh, good point. I hadn't thought of that. But, yeah, usually editing in shorts is, like, it's noticeable when it's not there.
Right. But I feel like this one, yeah, like you said, Charlie, to make the jokes land... you have to have the exact right amount of silence or the quickness of a cut or something. And I feel like they kind of hit all the notes.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, speaking of hitting all the right notes, let's talk about Blood Red Sky or Cielo de Color Rojo de Sangre.
Yeah.
Why not?
So before we start talking about it, can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Did either of you know what this movie was about?
I only did because the preview image that Netflix gave me was one where she was already in full vampire form. Mm-hmm. And I was angry about that because I think it would have been fun to not know that.
And see, I didn't see that. So that, I think, behooved my experience. What about you, Charlie?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see any of that stuff, but I did see people online. So I saw people online complaining about that. And then I was like, then I kind of put it together a little bit pretty early on because of that. So like, oh, I should be looking for X. I'm like, oh, well, yeah, that all checks out. So yeah, Netflix needs to do a better damn job of that, because I just think that's ridiculous.
They really do. They need to stop doing the autoplay trailer thing. Which there's a,
you can turn that off. Did you know that?
Yeah, that you can do that with. But like, I think a lot of people don't either know that or do that.
So I looked for it a couple of times and I gave up because I just sort of was like, they say that it's in there, and then that I think that they're making
it's in there. Yeah.
You have to go on to the desktop version of it, or the laptop.
That doesn't even make a damn bit of sense. Who does that?
Exactly.
I know. It's super stupid.
but so I went into this just stone cold stupid, which was the perfect way to watch
this. Oh, yeah. 10,000%.
Oh, my God. Because, you know, you get, what, 40 minutes in for the twist? I should say the first twist. And I went... Oh, okay. This is a whole different movie. Like, oh, shit. Okay. And I spent 10 minutes grappling with myself. Trying to figure out what I thought. Like, okay, like, I've got these notions. But now, oh. And, that actually kind of, like, rocked me back on my heels. Also, I will say, by the way, not to, like, jump ahead, this movie is gory as fuck.
Yeah.
And I literally had to pause it and put my head between my knees for 45 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Because, like, and this doesn't happen much to me. This used to happen all the time. I used to pass out in movie theaters, like, watching Event Horizon and shit like that. But, like, normally that's fine now because, you get used to it, right? You know? But I was watching this and all of a sudden I was like, oh, I'm getting lightheaded. Like, and not in the way where like I'm gonna throw up, but like I'm gonna pass out. And I've lost a lot of weight, so like I'm not like a 200 and some pound guy, but I'm still like 140 pound some guy. And I can't just thud on the ground and think things are gonna be okay. So I literally, paused the movie about hour 20 minutes in, something like that, and head between the legs, and then was like, because this is always TMI, listeners, when you get sick like that, and it's just like, okay, now I gotta take a shit, like, you have to have like the nervous shits, and so, but I can't walk because if I fall over, I might break something or my head, so. I had to crawl across my apartment to the bathroom, from the living room through the hallway to the bathroom, and then, like, lever myself up using, like, the sink and other things to be able to, like, use the toilet, and then, like, when I'm done, hit the, lever, and then kind of collapse back onto the floor, which was nice and cool, which felt good, and stay there for about 10 minutes. And then crawl back to the couch and then lay in front of the couch because getting on the couch is too much work. So this whole process took like 45 minutes. And then, finally felt a little better. Did not eat for 3 days after this happened because my stomach was just like, nope. So this is... And the thing is, I don't think it's that much gorier than other stuff we've watched. I think maybe just, like, it was more meaningful. You know? Like, the stakes are higher. But, thank you, John. But, I think there, like, it's just... I'm trying to figure this out because, like, K-Dog and Saint Manor are both just, like... Why this one? And I'm like, I'm not sure. I think it's how invested I am in the characters. So, like, I think that's actually always a sign of a good movie. Because, like, boy howdy, do I care about our main character. I care about the boy. I care about the dude. You know, like... So I think when something happens, like, it hits me hard as though it was someone I knew. And so, like, I don't know. Like, did you guys have, like, a sense of identifying with these people, or how'd this hit you?
I did identify with the characters. I didn't have too much trouble with the gore.
I assume that's specific
personally,
to me.
Personally, yeah. How about you? Were you invested in these characters?
Well, yeah, I definitely think so. Like, there's a, I think it's the line or the balancing act with, like, having the woman, you know, going to America for the treatment or whatever else, and then, like, but really early on they established, like, that dynamic between them, which is really kind of cool. Like, there's kind of it's a nice dynamic in terms of the mother and then the son and stuff. So it's kind of neat. So that dynamic pretty early on was pretty great. And watching the little boy interact with Fareed at the airport, I was like, oh, he's very nice. And, like, it was just kind of a cool little deal. And so he seems to, because of his mother's condition, he's having to kind of take some stuff on. But they really play that dynamic really, really well. And then as it's going along, the other part of it that I identified with, maybe just because of my latent just, you know, fear of flying, but it's like when you're in a plane, like, there's, you can't go anywhere. Like, you can't, like, you're kind of on the plane. Like, you can't, there's nowhere to go. And so, like, having all these people on the plane, where you have, like, the guys that are, like, doing the thing with the plane, with their whole plan, but then you have, like, the monster component, and it's like, you really got nowhere to go. And it's sort of, and so it really adds, like, when you have people being scared, as, like, I don't know, there's something palatable about that, which I really kind of identify with. I thought that the filmmakers, I think, made a lot of really smart choices about how to keep it clipping along, like, at a really kind of action film sort of pace, but then still weighting it in, like, kind of mortality and the people part of it. I mean, there's a few beats here and there that are, like, there's, like, the stock trader guy who's, like, a predictable asshole, and then you have, like, the third act where, like, they're just trying to tell people, like, there's a thing, and then they're like, shut up, you brown skin terrorist, bah, and, like, that kind of stuff. That's a little, you know, it's a little whatever, but, I mean, on the overall, like,
at the same time, though, these are not Friday the 13th kids. These are Nightmare on Elm Street kids, right? Like, we're meant to understand these people, and, like, if they're bad, like, we are rejoicing in kind of their comeuppance. But if they are not, we have identified with them enough because they've humanized them enough, you know, a la Nightmare versus...
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, for sure. You know. Well, and then
so,
also...
Like, I feel like they did a good job of just, like, look at these people that, like, you might only get, you know, probably... I bet if you add it up, it's, like, 5.5 minutes of screen time, but you care about them. And, like, it's a nice gift that we were given where, like, oh, cool, you've got this insane premise, and it's gonna get insane. Like, we'll get into that, but, like... You've managed to give us, just even in these, like, tiny moments, like, reasons to be like, oh, I hope they get through it. Like, that's awesome.
Well, and then I think as a, from a film craft standpoint, I think their decision to go back to how she got the thing was really cool.
Oh, God.
And
yeah,
really smart. It was like, but instead of being like what I was expecting it to be, yeah, it's a lot darker, a lot more emotional than you would expect it to be. And it's like, I was really kind of thrown for a loop by that whole bit, because it's like, usually what you're expecting is, you know, like a close call, and then you look down and you're like, it's like, you know, like a zombie thing where you're like, oh, made it, and you look like, oh, darn, I got bitten on the elbow and whatever, and that kind of thing. And it's like, it's less of that, and it was more of just sort of like a, this is a curse. This is a,
and they
know.
Do kind of touch on that a little here with the, what's his name, with that loses his hand?
Fareed.
Yeah, Fareed. They do kind of touch on the idea. This is essentially a zombie movie.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say they are like vampire with zombie rules.
They're ghouls.
Okay, sorry. I totally hijacked this conversation, Scully. You never even got through like the description. Do you want to tell
people what this movie's about? Yeah, real quickly, it's a woman is flying to America from Germany to get a treatment for a disease that is kind of vaguely defined, and we start with her son going to the airport during the day to check them in for the flight, and she only shows up after the sun goes down, and we go, So then we get on the airplane, and over the Atlantic Ocean, the plane is hijacked, and suddenly we have, you know, high stakes hijacking stuff going on. But then also, mom's disease is that she is a vampire, and a vampire in that can kind of lose themselves to bloodlust, it seems like. Where they can almost like wolf out.
It's like a berserker rage thing that can happen.
Yeah, and then you can see her kind of pull it back, but she gets to the point where she doesn't recognize like her own kid when she's fully vamped out. So it's more like a zombie rule, almost like a werewolf kind of rule.
Yeah.
But it's neat because when I heard Blood Red Sky, it was like, oh, is it going to be like vamps on a plane? But I wasn't expecting the vampire to be the hero. And that really changes the dynamics. And also midway through, there's only so much that she can do with the vampire stuff without losing herself. So it ends up just being Lady trying really hard not to be a vampire, doing Die Hard on a plane. Which is, you know, all of that is fascinating.
Yeah, I think this movie is... because, like, the premise, like, of just, like, okay, people are stuck on a plane with vampires. So that's, that is, it, because I just listened to it recently on Werewolf Ambulance. it is essentially the plot of 30 Days of Night, right?
Yeah, basically.
You're stuck. But it's like, no, this adds layers. Because there's... Because you can't. It does. There's so much going on. I'm not going to be able to cover everything, and I'm going to forget things because I'm a goldfish. But like you, so you have mom, who has spent, who knows how many years, trying to avoid giving in to her vampiric proclivities. Right. She's been taking medication. She's going to America to try to like. Cure it permanently, and then you have 8-Ball, the wild card of the bad guys that even the bad guys don't like.
Yeah,
that steals blood from mom to make himself a vampire, which starts the what's it called? You know, where you're toppling the dominoes, right? Because that becomes like, okay, more and more people become vampires. And so either you're a vampire at some point in this movie, or you're just meat. And, you know, we kind of see how that plays out. But then you have mom not wanting to be a vampire, so continually taking shots of her medicine that make her more human, but also depower her. But yeah. Then when she is, like, you know, gets shot, like, 5 times or gets the shit kicked out of her and has, like... One of the things I thought was fascinating about this movie is the vampires feeding off each other.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen a movie where that happens.
Yeah, before. That was a different kind of it adds an interesting... A different kind of dynamic.
Yeah, the way they fight is to bite each other and, like, rip out each other's throats. And then, like, it's like, okay, so if I win... I'm wounded, I'm barely alive, so I will either lap up your blood or go suck up someone else's, and it's just like, well, that's fucking crazy. I think that's where I got queasy. So you got that, but then you have mom, like, doing her best to stay as human as possible, despite that making her more vulnerable, but that also means she can be around her son without trying to kill him, right. Which then leads to... the scene where, you know, they kick 8-Ball out of the cargo hatch or whatever it is.
God, that was great.
mom's basically dead. Son cuts his palm and drips blood into mom's mouth to revive mom, which works. And then, you know, he wants to go hug mom. And you have like 7 or 8 times of him reaching out and mom slamming him back against the freight crate.
Yeah, because she at that point is so vamped she can't even speak.
Fucking heartbreaking.
Yeah.
That, oh. Like, that is, like, one of the most emotional things I've seen in a horror movie in a long time. Of just, like, this poor kid who, at the early parts of the movie, I was super pissed. Because, like, when his mom gets shot to shit the first time before we know she's a vampire, I was like, well, that's what you get, dipshit. You know, you fucked around. You didn't obey the rules. Except that, like, he knew his mom's a vampire. So it's fine. Right?
Right.
So, like, at first, before I knew that, I was super angry. I hated this kid. And I'm like, oh, I get it. Like, you realize she'd be fine, no matter what. But you watch her realize that she can't control herself, and the only thing to keep him safe is to keep him in the sunlight where she can't get at him.
Yeah.
It's like mm-hmm. the last possible act of humanity she can do. Fuck. That it's really powerful. Like, it's really cool, and it's heartbreaking. And, you know... And then you get to the finale where he's, you know, trying to explain that, like, Duder, who had his arm cut off, is not a terrorist. That's the whole thing that the terrorists were trying to, like, convey, is that, like, ah, you'll hate brown people.
Yeah. Know?
And then he keeps screaming for his teddy bear. And that takes an hour and a half to pay off. You know? Like,
oh, fuck. Yeah.
Like, all right. And then that little kid having the wherewithal to just be like, nope, gotta end this. Boop. And just destroying the plane, his mother, and all the vampires is like, fuck. Like, I did not see that coming. I assumed they'd find a different way out of this. And I felt like this movie, like, while it was, there were things that were familiar with, the story took turns I wasn't expecting every now and again. So, like, yeah, I had a fucking blast with this week. This is my favorite of the week. So, I don't know. Sorry, I've been monologuing. What do you guys think?
Mm-hmm. What do you got there, Charles?
Yeah, I thought it was really cool, really well made, and just, yeah, I mean, like, I think, Matt, you said it very well. It's like, there's some familiar things there, but it's not, like, they're not just sort of leaning back on those things to get it through, like, they're having to add more to it. Like, I mean, I always think the piece de resistance is let the right one in, and it's sort of like what do they do but just add more meat to the bones of the thing that we already are familiar with without complicating it, but making it, like, deeper and more emotional or more, like, interesting or more, you know, in it, more many things. And it's sort of like, and that's one of the beautiful things that Let the Right One In did. And, like, this is not that. This is kind of more like an action kind of a deal. But it's like, but there is some of that emotional weight to it. And then also, too, like, just sort of the idea of, like, you know, how do you figure out how you fly a transatlantic flight so that you don't, you know, you're not exposed to the sun or whatever else. And, like, and just this idea of just a little logistical idea like that. It's like, I was really tickled by that. It's like, it shows a lot of care in what they were, you know, what they were trying to do. I'm not sure. I got to think about it for a couple more days about the dynamic between, you know, the kind of crazy guy who, I love the gag of him playing up, like, being like the gay steward with the kind of, you know, kind of asshole guy in First Class, where he's like, you know, kind of says some crass thing to the kind of, you know, attractive stewardess lady, and she asks him to take over, and he's and this idea that, like, yeah, he's gonna have the very gay steward for the entire transatlantic fight. I found that to be very funny, but then his character was, like, kind of all over the board, especially given that they'd cast Dominic Purcell in there. It's like, you know, because, I mean, he's, you know, Dominic Purcell is, as I like to think of him, as being like a paramilitary thumb. He's just sort of like this, like, very, you know, more like in Blood Creek, where sort of like, you know, it's, but he's not too far off for that either. But so, like, the dynamic between the bad guys is kind of an interesting dynamic. Like, I don't, you know, it's like, it's not really, like, it's hard to get a gauge on how this group got together. as far as like to, you know, like, but maybe that's not this movie. This movie is not taking half the movie to explain the setup of the heist or the plan, so to speak. Like, that's not what the movie cares about. And that's perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with that at all.
Yeah, you could shoot a different movie that shows it from their perspective that would have 30 minutes before the flight takes off, then the flight, mm-hmm. then the vampires. Like, you could, I've watched that movie too. You know,
I mean, like, hard, the movie Hard Rain, you know, the one with Christian Slater and Morgan Freeman, like, you know, they go into the flooded town to rob the thing or whatever. Like, that could be a monster movie, but, like, instead, it's a heist movie. And, like, in the same setup, it could be like, well, let's unleash this, you know, like, creature from the swamp thing, and then they got to deal with this, whatever. And, like, then it's a monster movie, but instead, it's like, that's a heist movie. It's like, so.
Well, for that, we have to also include Deep Rising.
Yes. Yes. Damn right. About
heist movies turned monster
yes,
movies.
Yes, you're goddamn right. Freaking Deep Rising is just awesome.
But I like here, definitely, there's not a single one of the hijackers that you're meant to feel any feelings for, really. There's, like, the dude who's a straight-up psychopath and the other guys who are just trying to get rich. But, like, kind of fuck all of them. And they don't give you a moment where, like, one of them pulls out a locket with a picture of his daughter or any of that
they
shit.
The only time they tease that, like, is Punching Neckline Guy, which is what we called him here. Punching Neckline Guy, like, seems like the most human. But it's like, but they don't ever play that up to the point where you're like, oh, damn, I wish he hadn't died. Like, it's sort of like, they don't, you're right, you're totally right, Joshua. They don't, that's not a thing that they're leaning into.
Yeah, they're never, none of them ever stop being evil. But I do like that there is a demarcation between the sociopath and thug. You know, like, the fact that they're like, dude, yeah, like, we all want to, like, hold a gun to someone's head to get this money, but, like, you're stabbing people for no reason, that's fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, so they're, like, but that doesn't make them good guys.
Exactly.
Ever, which is nice. Like, yeah. You know, they remain just bad less guys, bad. But they're just like, dude, that's fucked. Like, quit it, you know? Like, I liked that, because, like, that's a weird, thin line to draw, but I feel like this movie actually does it.
Man, the people who don't kill women and children
for no reason, yeah,
yeah, or dudes for no reason even. Yeah. I should point out to everyone that this movie has the entire spectrum of necklines.
Yes,
because we have the one guy who's just like, it's like somebody took the top off of like a ball gown. It's like a boat neck.
Well, it's because it doesn't fit him shirt, right. Like, that's the gag, is that they didn't, his jumpsuit doesn't fit him right.
Yeah, but it was super funny. I just figured he was European. So he's like, you know, shoulders out, kind of, you know, working it. And then we have the one dude in a turtleneck. And we're like, well, that's it, you know. Unless you pull it up over your head, that's pretty much the entire spectrum. Yeah, this is a stone cold classic. It is real
fucking
good.
This is a fucking delight, yeah.
I should say, as a total plebeian, that it's like I wasn't in the mood for subtitles when I watched it, so I thought I'd see if the dub was any good, and it is. Like, this is the rare, like, I watched it in English. It's the rare dub that actually, you know, has different people for every character, say, and also those people know how to act, and they actually mixed the dialogue into the sound of the movie too, so it was not jarring at all. Of course, ironically, then I couldn't really hear the dialogue very well, so then I had the subtitles anyway. But, it is a good dub. Like, Netflix is doing good work with that.
Yeah, they've been doing pretty well, I think, with the stuff I've watched lately. Yeah. Put a number on it.
I would say for... Well, I was going to.
Sorry.
Bitch!
I'm doing it. I would say this is pretty great. I really dug Quiet Place as well, but so I don't know if it's my favorite of the week, and I don't know if that matters, but I would say it's a good 8.5 out of 10. Ladies with bat ears is.
Yeah, I'm kind of right in that wheelhouse with you. I thought this was one that, well, like I said earlier, I went into this completely cold, and sorry. Based on the title, I was like, vampires? But that was as much as I thought and knew. So that paid off, but it did not pay off in the way I thought it would. So that was fucking cool. But yeah, I think this movie, it may be a little long, because it clocks in at just over 2 hours, and it probably could lose 15 minutes and be... It might benefit it to do that. But I think Sun is really annoying early on, like in Act 1. And, like, you know, at the transition to Act 2, like... his dipshitted annoyingness gets his mom killed, which is becomes the reveal that she's a vampire. So, like, it's sort of like, oh, I get it. Like, there's a reason he's behaving so recklessly, right? So, like, it kind of retroactively does a thing. But, like, so I feel like it'd be interesting to watch again and see how I feel about that performance. But, like, that was tough for me to sit through on the first pass. Otherwise, the amount of... Okay, is this dumb? This movie made me think of Noises Off.
Huh.
Because, you know, there's like the... What's happening, you know, like an upstairs, downstairs farce. Yeah. And so, like, you've got the cargo hold, you know, where they're doing the whole thing. And then you've got, like, where the passengers are. And everybody's kind of like playing a cat and mouse game between the two. And so it made me think of that. And that's weird, maybe. But like, it's that whole thing of like, you know, one person knows what's going on here, one person knows what's going on there. And then when they switch, only one of each switches, which means only everyone gets half imperfect information, which then causes further problems, which then one of them goes back to the other spot, but now they have some kind of information, but it's imperfect. And, like, that seems to cause the problems for Act 2 and 3 in this, right? Yeah. You know, and so, like, it was a weird comparison, but, like, I could not stop thinking of that. So I was just like, Christopher Reeve. Like, what would he do? Like, so I don't know. I really love this movie. I think this is really, really good. This will be one of the ones that I recommend to people this year, much like we did in previous years with, you know, you pick a certain movie like, you know, Green Room or Big Bad Wolves. I would say... You know what? I'm going to say this lands at a 9.
Nice.
Yeah. I had a blast. Like I said, I got sick watching it, so, you know... Be prepared. It is gory. There's a lot of blood in this, and people just ripping each other apart. So, if that's not your jam, or, like, you know, to me it helps sometimes to turn down the volume, and, like, it's not as bad, but, like, just be forewarned. But I really think this is very well done, both in story and style. So, yeah, like, I think everyone should watch this. Yeah. So, I'll say 9. Oh, sorry. 9 out of 10, 9 out of 10 teddy bears.
Next.
It's just a really kind of a cool... It's so fascinating when you get these ones that you sort of like, you don't know going in what you're actually getting out, you're going to get out of it. And like, you know, like The Devil's Rock was another one, and like Last Shift was one where it's sort of like, you know, it's, I don't know, it's just kind of a neat thing. And like, I think if I watch this again, I'm gonna see even more stuff in there where, like, there's little bits here and there where, like, when they're saying over the intercom to him, he's trying to find the trigger. He's like, you know, don't push the big button because that's the ignition thing or whatever else. And so immediately I was like, like, don't, oh crap, like, now we have this threat. Then I started thinking about it, like, well, you have to unlock the phone to do the thing, and I was like, of course. But I was like, because, I mean, it's been the guy's pocket the entire time. You know, so sort of like, okay, well, it's fine. But still, there's that little bit of thing in there to throw in there, like, oh, god dang it. So it just, there seems to be like 1,000 of those little choices in the movie like this that you really admire. I love the design of the kind of vampire-y, kind of monster-y guys.
They're creepy as fuck.
It's just that little bridge over the eye, the nose, and then the little bit with the ears, and then whatever, and like the, it's like just little stuff. It's nothing big, and I dig that. There's something like less is more in a way. Like, I mean, I like it to be a big four-headed vampire as much as the next guy, but it's sort of like, I don't know, sometimes just doing a little bit of a different thing with it is pretty cool. So yeah, I thought that was really cool overall. I quite enjoyed it. I thought it was a well done deal. So I'll say 8.5 out of 10. 8.5 out of 10 layovers in Transylvania.
Boogans.
I was just thinking the number of times somebody said, "Turn this plane around." It's like, "Don't make me turn this plane around." Yeah. You kids.
I gotta pee. Don't make me turn this plane around.
It was funny though too, because the movie actually addressed one of the things where they kept saying that, like, "Oh, they turn the plane this way, and they turn the plane this way, and this and whatever else." And it's like I'm no aviation expert, but I can also tell you that I can also say that, you know, when you have flights that are designed to go long distances, they don't load them up with too much more fuel than they need for the thing because of the weight. And so, like, right. Like they can't just be like, "Eat, oh, I forgot my, oh, I, did I leave the kettle on? Oh, I gotta go back. Oh, we gotta turn back around again." Like, it's just not a thing.
Yeah, there's no, like, right. Oh shit, dryer cycle.
Yes, like, it doesn't work. Like, but I love the fact that the movie actually addressed that. The thing, we can't go, like, anywhere else. Like, what are you crazy? Like, we can't turn around again. We'd turn around for hours.
Would you like to take a brief break and then we'll come back with our other two movies? All right, we'll be right back. So next up, let's talk about Quiet Place 2 or Lugar Tranquilo 2. This one picks up almost exactly where the first one left off, with just enough time to give us a little John Krasinski cameo, but then we're back in the world where things, if they hear you, will come and eat you. And, like, as long as you don't think too hard about that, it works as a movie, I think.
I think that's this the one, key.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give it, like when you get out of, like, the pool or the lake, and you do that thing where you kind of, like, shake your ankle and you're like, "Brr," to, like, get the water off. If you do that with logic.
Yeah.
This movie's fucking fantastic. Because honestly, I think this is a great movie. You just have to do a little, like, "Brr," before, and, like, you're fine. You know, and every now and again you go, like, "What's going on?" You go, "Brr." You're good.
And to me, it's like, why would you want to be the guy who sits there the entire movie going, "Well, why didn't they?"
Yeah, so you just roll with it. Yeah.
Yeah. So the, like, John Krasinski's out of the picture. We got mom, two kids, new baby, which is a little tense. Baby in the little box with the oxygen mask whenever it starts crying. And then they run into Cillian Murphy, which is amazing that he's just kind of in there being a dude.
Which, again, I think him eat a bowl of cereal. That dude's such a good actor.
But it made me think of, like, Michael Moriarty in Troll. Like, who's like, we need an ordinary average dude for this movie. Cillian Murphy. Like, his face is chilling. Let's cast him.
Who would you have picked? Like, who would be your...
His face is chilling.
Who's the everyman right now?
Oh, man.
I mean, there's a couple out there. Like...
Well, somebody that age, like... I don't know, but not Cillian Murphy.
Certainly not him.
He's always, like, the weird looking dude.
For sure. But I'm just trying to think of, like, because you're right. Like, he's a little too. Sorry, I'm losing my voice because the walking to work with the hazy bullshit. Is this the kind of thing that works best? Because I feel like what you need is, like, your... You know how, like, what's the movie? Big Trouble in Little China, right? Like, Kurt Russell is sort of like the sidekick. Right. But he managed to pull it off. And I feel like that's kind of what you're looking for here. Obviously, Kurt Russell doesn't work. But do you maybe go, like, with, like, a Michael Rooker? Because that's a little less, like, leading man, but still, like, looks like he's capable of kicking ass?
Mm-hmm. I think it would have been less distracting to have somebody who is not well-known.
Mm.
So I think that would have been a better pull. But at the same time, he does a really good job. Like, he's a great actor.
Yeah.
It's just, it's hard to forget that it's him. But, so this is interesting, right? Because the first movie had this very straight line plot where it was just, let's see how much trouble we can get these dudes into. And they're, you know, it's just a single through line. And with this, we split into, like, Cillian Murphy and daughter are going one direction, mom's going another direction, and then little boy is doing stupid, stupid shit in his own little story. So by the climax, they're, like, cutting between these three threads of story in, like, Return of the Jedi style.
I thought that was actually kind of interesting, is, like, what it got to be a little predictable. But, like, the way they were, like, making sure everyone had a parallel storyline, and then they cut between
them all. Dug it. I think they did a really bang-up job. Whoever edited this thing needs an Oscar.
Yes, the editor just here
for keeping it straight.
Hero. Yeah.
Because that's what's going to preserve the tension or dissipate it, and I think they actually preserved it really well.
Yeah, I was impressed.
What you got there, Charles?
Yeah, I mean, I struggled with this one a little bit. I mean, I liked it overall. I mean, I did like it overall. And Josh, we were communicating about this one a little bit. I liked it overall, but it's like, it felt like it was kind of like two movies that were kind of like, just get done watching the Olympics, all the Olympic stuff. So I was like, you know, it's like a relay. It was like two movies that are involved in a relay, and there was like a hand and a stick, and it's kind of like, and so it felt a little bit disjointed at times, and I don't know if maybe they had like some of the aspects of the stories were longer, or the story was longer, and then they just kind of had to sort of mush them together, like the dock people, for example, like that whole bit was really kind of like a different, almost like a different kind of a movie in some respects. It was like, so I don't really, this is going to be one of those ones that I'm basically committed to going back and watching again in a few months, because I just sort of want to like revisit some of it. Cause you know, come then I saw the theater, and then like you watch it again, you know, watch it at home. But it was like, I don't know. Yeah. I just like, I mean, I liked it. I can't pinpoint exactly what my problem is.
Did you say you got to see this one in the theater?
Yeah, the kid and I went to go see this in the theater.
How was that experience compared to watching it at home?
It's better.
But I mean, because like sometimes there's movies that like the theater experience kind of makes the experience.
Oh right? Yeah, I don't know, totally.
And there's things where like it doesn't matter. You can just wait until it comes home. So like, but is this one that like if you get the chance, see it on a big screen?
Yeah, I mean, I think because I mean, there's some of that stuff that's in the. There's some of the stuff that's in the middle, the second into the third act, where it's just the flow of it, and whoever they had running the cameras, like, it's just a magician, because it's like some of that stuff say it this way, you get used to the kind of Zack Snyder herky jerkiness of a lot of actiony things and sequences, versus the way that, boy, I'm gonna sound like an old guy here, but like the way that things were shot in like say like a movie like Glory.
I love Glory.
It's like, yeah. But like, think about how those battlefield scenes are handled, and there's a flow to it. There's almost like an elegance to it in a way, and so many action movies that I like or I enjoy, that's not their thing, and like you, in the second third act of this movie, there was that some of those bigger moving pieces, and I so admire that. So, like I said, I really want to go back again and just figure out what my problem is. Because, like, I liked it, I just didn't love it. You know, I guess. But I hate saying that, but it's like, that's kind of where I come down on it.
Was this... I was trying to figure this out. I assume it's the case, because that seems to be just how things are done now. Was this... Were there just, like... Like, all those cool shots? They're, like, they're not crane shots anymore. They're drone shots now, right?
I mean, to a degree. I mean, I think you still have to... You still have to run... Like they on Peldor for Aaron's the Western, the one the Witcher mm-hmm. and the Western deal. Like there was some drone stuff in there, but they also they rigged up they did a crane bit and they had a setup.
I just feel like that they're getting thrown out there like those kind of shots so much more frequently, and so if I'm
watching
a movie and it's like the fifth one in a row out of six shots, I'm just like, okay, someone bought a drone.
I was gonna say somebody got a new toy.
Yeah, exactly. So like that's kind of the thing, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like that's fine. Like it lets you do new things, but also sometimes I think people are just like gratuitous with it, where just like you're watching so much fly by, fly overhead, you know, all that stuff. But and you go, okay, I get it. Yes, you have a drone. Good job. But does this scene require one, or would it be more intimate if you were doing a close up on the person's face? You know.
Yeah, it starts like to become. There's a disconnect to it. Yeah, where you sort of like, okay, that's neat and all, but
there was a
to be gross and like quote, you know, Jurassic Park. It's like, you know, whether or not you should. You did it because you could.
Yeah.
And, like, that's not always the best. I don't think this movie quite crosses that line.
No, I don't think so.
But it did make me think about that line, which means it was close.
It was weird, though. Like, a couple, 3 years ago, there started to be a trend for, like, drone shots of just forest.
Yeah.
And there were drone shots in forests for just for goddamn ever. But, and it's weird that that's something that happens enough that you can get sick of it. This has some real motherfuckers of set pieces.
It really does.
Yeah. Very cool. I love the whole, like, group of assholes and the way that pans out. And the island of survivors. And, like, this does a good job of expanding out the world in directions that we've seen before, but kind of making them feel fresh.
Yeah,
you know, like in Peninsula, they had the group that had kind of gone feral mm-hmm. and was just out for themselves. The island thing reminded me of the book The Fireman by Joe Hill, which is somebody needs to make that a movie mm-hmm. too. But
we'll get there.
Just having the like last destination for humanity. To kind of rally their forces. I feel like this... I don't think that this is as good a like a horror movie as the first one. It's definitely that aliens to alien thing. But I liked this ending much better. Because I just wasn't... You recall, I wasn't sold on the whole dude sacrifices himself to save his family thing. It's just like, figure a new way to end a thing. Instead of trying to tearjerk emotions like that. You know, like, it felt a little bit cheap to me. But this one, actually, I think gets it right. And not just because they didn't kill the kid.
Well, and then the, was it the thing, was it the little baby box with the little oxygen deal, that whole like way that they figured out how to do this. It's like, it does make mm-hmm. me think of the thing that I think of when I think of this type of stuff, similarly to like with zombie things, which is like, why aren't people sleeping in coffins? Why aren't they sleeping in coffins? Mm. Because like coffins are not airtight, but they are thick and they would absorb sound. So like the being underground thing makes a lot of sense because like, you know, okay, it absorbs some sound. That's very smart. But like, why are people out in sleeping in coffins? What's wrong with them? What does it make no damn sense? Like, get yourself a coffin. Find yourself a coffin. Doesn't make a damn sense.
Yeah.
Or just live by the waterfall. But, you know.
That too.
You can't live that life, though.
Yeah, I feel like this one, and it's been a while since we watched the first, and I've got a brain like a goldfish, as St. Matt reminds me. But, like, this felt very satisfying mechanically, you know, because like most horror films hinge on some kind of mechanical premise, right? This one is like, okay, I get the rules, I understand them immediately, and you may or may not like fudge how you get by them, but for the most part I don't think this one does much of that. But it was just like, okay, at least it's a well-defined universe, which compared to some of the movies you've watched recently, or at least I've watched recently, like, they're not always even that well defined. So, like, you can't tell if someone's breaking the rules, or if they're following them, or just they've never even said it yet until afterwards. And, like, this, I think this has the strength of a lack of deus ex machina, I think. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think so.
But because I don't feel like there's a point where, like, they do a thing and you go, oh, turns out they're allergic to, you know, pine nuts. And you go, what? Like, they haven't brought that up before. Like, you know, like, everything seems to hang together. Like, the rules they establish, whatever they might be, crazy they might be, which is kind of the whole thing, is like, you just swallow it whole, you know, lie back, think of England. But, this one seems to have pretty clear-cut rules, and I think it sticks to them. And so, now, there may be a little, like, woogly-boogly as far as how far people strain credulity, but, like, they stick to the rules. You know what the rules are. They know what your universe is like. And, like, that's actually kind of rewarding, because you feel like you know where you know, you have some, like, firm footing to, like, watch this movie. Whereas sometimes you watch movies and they keep kind of changing the rules on you as they go, and you're like, well, wait, hang on, not this. Suddenly they're vulnerable to soup spoons after 2 a.m. Like, what the fuck? Like, mm-hmm. You know, like, that sucks. Like, that's boring. So I don't know. I really dug this. I thought this was really fun.
I think that it's still hard to beat them, like, especially from after Conjuring 3. Like, they are struggling and just barely making it.
Yeah.
And there's so much tension to be had there.
Did you guys actually, I meant to ask you this earlier. You know, when I forget the name of the character, gets to the island, right? Hangs out, is like, yep, this is dope. They can't swim, super chill. And then finds the boat. Did you have a moment of thinking it was the... And maybe I just didn't pay attention. It should have been obvious. Because I had a moment of thinking it was, like, the human character that was trying to kill Cillian Murphy. So I was... But I was like... Then I was baffled. Because I was like, wait, did we see him die for sure? Because I thought we didn't. But maybe we did. But I thought it was just kind of implied. And so to me, it was like, oh, shit, now you've got a serial killer on this island that's going to fight you, even though you've escaped the, like, actual monsters. Now you've got this human monster. And I thought that was where the third act was going. And so when it was just, like, one of the monsters, that actually kind of surprised me. Is it just me, or did you guys have any of that?
I thought for a second, yeah, maybe.
Yeah,
that was it was the dude. What did you think?
Yeah, like, there's a possibility, or like almost like a sabotage type of a, you know.
Yeah, like, or he would have brought he would have brought a creature over. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, that's I was kind of thinking that route. Like, it's like, okay, this is gonna be some kind of, you know, some kind of weird tomfoolery, and sort of like, yeah, it was an interesting deal. I mean, when you see the boat, it's like, oh no, yeah, that ain't good.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I assumed that was human interference, and it's like, nope, just dumb luck.
Like, yeah, basically. Right. It's like,
because had it gone like 40 degrees east, everyone's fine.
Yeah, but I kind of dig that idea that of just like, we keep trying and we keep being fucked, and then we try, you know, we have to constantly keep saving our asses here. I thought
it
was fun.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I liked it. I'm just saying, it was just like, that was a moment where I was like, oh, shit. It's going to be like, the real evil is man, you know? And it was like, oh, nope. I guess the real evil is evil. Never mind. Like, man kind of... Man's not holding up well. But, like, you know, he's like... He's still trying to get on the board.
I do quite like the idea, though, that, like, you could fast forward down the line a little ways, where they've settled into life, and like the monsters are, you can see the monsters, but like they can't get across the water, and so you just like go down to the beach every night and do like fuck the monsters, and like do like a thing with like a bunch of cowbells and noisemakers, like, woo-hoo, fuckers. Like, I really like that as like an event. I think it's funny.
Like, hey, everyone, we're going to have Moon and Alien Night.
Yes, it's just like, it just tickles me. I don't know. It's so silly, but it makes me laugh.
That turns into other creepy movies we've watched recently. So, anyway.
It does.
Can we throw a number on this?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was pretty sold on this as far as like a horror sequel goes. It runs in all the right directions. And I, again, just have to praise that editing on the back half of that, because that could have been absolutely ridiculous, but it was really good. So I'd say 8 again, 8 out of 10. Oh dear God, when they're running out of oxygen and the little coal thing, and because they didn't put the towel on there, and so then it's, yeah, all that. 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm gonna say 8 out of 10. Let's see, what, 8 out of 10, Islands, Road 2, fuck it, whatever. But yeah, like that, Scully, you brought up, like, one of the most harrowing sequences in this movie is just like, oh shit, we're gonna have to watch this kid choose to let his infant sibling die in order to keep himself alive. And I was like, that's fuck movie. That's some,
yeah,
that's a deep moral choice that you're gonna make us explore. And they do dodge it. Like, they don't quite get there. They're both fine, you know, but like, I was like, oh my God, if that is going to be the moral conundrum you pose to us, like, bravo. Like, I was looking forward to that conundrum and seeing how they played it out, because I was like, that I it's an impossible question. And I would love to see how this movie addresses it. And then I would love to spend the next, I don't know, 6-7 years unpacking it and trying to figure it out. Because I was like, oh my God, that's some heavy shit. So, and the fact that, even the fact that they teased it.
Yeah, so yeah, you come right up to that. Is the precedent for that. Like, woof.
Yeah, because they're, you know, like, if you are, if you are dehydrated and someone's holding a chalice full of water and all you can do is kind of lick the edges, that's what they did with this conundrum. And it, in one way, that's kind of more effective. But in another way, it only makes you want more. Like, it's really, really just like, fuck. And so, I spent hours talking about this idea without it ever actually being shown on screen, but just the idea that they, like, made me think about it. And it's like, oh, you son of a bitch, you're making me do the work.
People be walking around just handing out a single Pringle. Like, what are you doing?
So, yeah, no, this, I think this movie, I think it exceeds the original. It's really good. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. I just can't really pinpoint why it wasn't just sort of like just ass over tea kettle as far as that goes. But I mean, it's so well done technically, and it's just got so much going for it that I just like, maybe I don't know. You know, I mean, I'm not sure exactly, but it's, you know, it's still really good. I think this Krasinski fellow's got a future. It seems like maybe if he just keeps at it, he'll get a chance at something that'll be part of the zeitgeist for the next 50 years. But, you know, we'll here's hoping. But I would say 7 out of 10. I'd say 7 out of 10. Pour one out for the snorers, the sleep talkers, and the sleep farters.
Nice.
Sleep farter. It just sounds like, yeah, my name is Hans Sleep Farter.
I took the red pill. I'm the sleep father. Twisted sleep father.
Gosh. Jess and I were talking about how, like, whenever we do the, like, joke German accent, it always goes, like, weird and sexual. Like, I think it was Matt that first observed that the German accent is just good for saying, you know, like, oh, Hans, why don't you put on your little britches?
No, you know? See, I stole that from Henry Rollins.
Oh, okay. Because
his thing was like, the German accent is just like, show me your papers, and then I will put on my tiny panties! Like, it's just, it somehow is the same tone, works for both. And mm-hmm. I heard that back in like the, I don't know, way back in the 1900s. And for me, forever. And I've got family in Germany that, you know, German is their first language. And they come over here and I go, because all I can think of is them like prancing about. So I'm a monster, is what I'm saying. But yeah, but that is the thing. So if you, all you do is you take that exact extreme accent. Because I think, I don't know if we talked about this on the show, Dane, who runs Burning Brothers Brewery in St. Paul, guy that taught me to blow fire, he'd go, "Do you want to play Gestapo?" And you go, "What?" And he goes, "Do you want to play Gestapo?" And you go, I don't know what that is. And he goes, "Do you want to play Gestapo?" And it, you can say yes, no, maybe, I don't know what that is. And he slaps you as hard as you, as hard as he can. And he goes, "I'll ask the questions." And then you have a, you know, take a shot. But yeah, it's that, that accent is just super funny because that's how you deflate evil. Is just making it comical. So, yeah. So
I mean, the one that, the way that we always told that joke in college was, "Have you heard the joke about the Gestapo?" They say no, and you go, "Liar!
Show me your papers." You can do that one too.
Well, I like the answer. I like the variant of that one myself, Josh. I like the, "Have you heard the one about the gazpacho?" And I say, like, "Cold soup." I love that one. I love that joke.
And it, at best, you actually have cold soup to throw on someone.
Yeah, I've always, that's been one of my
greatest. That makes the joke wicked funny.
But that's been one of my greatest, like probably one of my greatest, I wouldn't want to say fantasy, but I would say dreams from being a kid, is the ability for a Looney Tunes character to be able to pull any object out of thin air and be able to, like, oh, here's the thing. And like for my entire life, I would say, I wouldn't say maybe like every day or every week, but fairly often I come in and I have a situation where I just go like, God, it'd be great to just be like, whoop, a hippo. Like, it's just like, I wish I had the ability to do that. Like a damn Looney Tunes character.
Reach behind your back and the thing, like, just, you know, boink.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, it's just like, and not for monetary gain.
I want hammer space.
Just like, just a way to, you know, and it's like, and that, that fucker clown top. Or clown top, carrot top tried to co-opt that concept, but it's like, it's just a trunk. You gotta carry the trunk. You can see the trunk. Come on, man. Not cool.
Yeah, the, okay. All right. We can cut this if we need to. The thing I've wanted to do since, 1998, maybe 99, was when, before we had the term Karen, right? Like, but there were always those kind of customers. Mm-hmm. And so my thing was always, I wanted to be able to, like, because if someone started just going like, womp, 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 you know, like with their Karen bullshit, I would just go dead-eyed and just kind of just like try to show that I just am tuned out. Like, I'm going to sit here until you're done and then I'm going to go and we're done. But I always wished that I could vomit on command. And I don't mean like bleh, but just like quietly, like, you know, like when babies do, like when you feed them and you're like, nyum, 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 and they kind of, it just kind of runs back out and down their chest. I'm like, I want that. I want that ability. Because if I just sat there and as you complain to me about how your latte had 1.5 shots instead of 1.75 shots, and I could just go, uh-huh. Uh-huh. And after 2 minutes, just vomit slowly poured down my chin onto my chest and ran down my shirt. And they'd be like, because, you know, that would horrify people. I'm like, but that's the superpower. I don't want to, like, projectile vomit. I just want to be able to go like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And just as I'm looking at you and nodding, slowly
Blurp.
Vomit starts running down my chin onto my shirt. Because I feel like that would probably kick all those people off. And, like, that's amazing. So, that's the... there you go. That's the super... Like, one of my three wishes is that.
There you go.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, and then also a Cure for AIDS in My Name and Kill Hitler, I guess. Whatever.
But really, the Vomit on Command thing.
I'd have more fun with that. Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Where are we at?
Well, we're going to finish off with a classic horror story, or Historia de Terror Clásico. I did watch this in the original Italian and a little bit of English. This has that character that I really like. That's the one who's the like the English boyfriend.
Yeah.
The English
like
boyfriend.
We had the English girlfriend in the one that was all in like Iranian or Farsi.
Yeah, yeah.
Talking about the dude that's his leg broke?
Yeah, but it, just that idea of like everybody's Italian except him, and he only speaks as much Italian as
he has to.
Yeah, he has like a couple of phrases, and it's like that's always fun to see. But a group of people like carpooling in a camper hit a tree and wake up in the camper in the middle of the woods now, and then there's a cult. And then there's a hard right turn. And overall, this is really gory and nihilistic, which is kind of lovely. But a little bit half-baked for me. But there were definitely moments with the gore where I was just like...
Yeah. Okay. So, like, I think there are... Okay. So, those are two... not easy, but like those are two simple categories upon which to compare things in this movie versus others, okay? And so you got your story category and you got your like effects gore category. I think effects gore type stuff, like the eyeball head squeezy thing, like, mm-hmm. that's messed up.
Yeah.
Like, that made me sick. That was great. And there's more than that. We'll get back to it. But then there's the story stuff where, for the first, what would you say, act one at least, so the first 30 minutes, maybe longer, this is essentially Cabin in the Woods, where it's just referencing everything. Whether or not it's saying it, because sometimes it does overtly say it, but it's also just doing things that reference other movies or books or whatever, and you're like, okay, I get it. You're fans. This is an homage, but it's fine. That's cool. And like that's, I think, part of why I get annoyed in Act 3, and we'll get there later, I guess. But... Mm-hmm. In the meantime, you end up with, like, a bunch of really fun pulls that relate to things. And even when someone, like, overtly mentions, like, you know, like, oh, we fell asleep at the side of the road and woke up at Sam Raimi's cabin. And it's like, okay, that's cute. Like, I can roll with that. That's fun. Like, that's cool. Because, like, we used to, you know, how many movies have we watched where someone's last name is Craven or something like that? Like, I get it.
Sure.
So it's that same idea. And I was like, oh, right on. Like, these people are fans. And again, Act 3 kind of ruins it for me. And so you end up with a ton of really cool references, whether they're spoken. And honestly, I like the ones where they aren't, where they're just like, if you get it, you get it. I think there's a ton. Like, holy shit, there's a ton of those. And I respect the shit out of them for that. But then... you get into, like, the middle, like, Act 2 is just torture porn, which I'm not against. It's just, it's nothing new or novel, you know? And then you get to Act 3, and that's the part that I was curious to see what you guys thought of.
So before, I mean, I can get into it, but I know Charlie had a different feel about that act than we did. Okay. Yeah, so this was working for you, right?
Yeah, Tim? I, you know, I kind of, you know, for one thing, it's just the movie is very, there is a, there, it is chock full of all kinds of visual and conceptual, you know, references and stuff like that. There's all kinds of stuff in there.
Well, you
got about
15 seconds between references. Like, yeah, it's chock full.
Well, yeah. And what I liked, they never seem to like look back at the camera so much, which I really appreciate for sure.
Oh yeah, it's not arch. It's just well done.
But one of the things that I liked about that part of it, or that aspect of it, especially as you get into the third act, is that I look back on that and I just go like, this self-important, kind of like indulgent, obnoxious person cares only about being recognized as like doing this thing and yada 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 and whatever else, and like forgetting about humanity, forgetting about like how it's not so good to like kill people necessarily, and like all those other kinds of things, like, and he's just really focused on this like self-aggrandizing thing. But as you as the viewer, at least for me anyway, so much of what's going on in there are just being pulled from other things. So like he's putting together a pretty good mixtape, but it's like at a certain point, it's like when you're creating a thing like a film, it's not good enough. And so like, yeah, oh, this is gonna be this is authentic for this, and then she realizes, and then blah 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 blah, all this kind of stuff. He's deluded himself into this kind of downward spiral of all this nonsense, and that I really dug. I really love that whole concept of like how somebody could dilute themselves into this kind of thing. Because, I mean, people do it for a lot less. I mean, you know, you can watch any of the oxygen stations, oxygen or the true crime one or Lifetime or whatever else. There are plenty of people in this country and other countries that kill people for a whole lot less. And so they have this idea like, oh, well, yeah, I could never kill a person for this. Like, man, you know, kill somebody for a Twix bar. Like, it's just sort of like people, you know, if you're gonna do it, you're gonna do it. It doesn't really matter what the motivation is. So there's like this self-important kind of knucklehead, like, just there's something kind of cool about that, as being like that being this part of the motivation, and like, oh, it's informing the way that this whole thing's coming together. And that speaks to me to the way, to the kind of the slight obviousness of some of the stuff early on.
Well,
you know, like,
see,
like,
Charlie,
like Dumpy,
I would say,
like Dumpy Wicker Man is a perfect example. Like, the first time you see it, you're like, okay, all right, guys. Like, jeez. But it's like, yeah. of course, this dude is going to
do a Wicker Man.
Yeah, of course.
But see, here's the thing, Charlie. Like, I think the thing you're describing, I can totally get behind. I don't think this movie gave it to me, because I like that idea. And I think that may be part of what they were going for. But I feel like maybe it's the performance, you know, or maybe
he's really hard.
I
have to say, for performances, he is really hard to take the entire third act. I think that's part of the reason for it. But I mean, he is hard.
I like the idea.
Because
like but the thing is, I was just like, well, we've seen this. This is Scream. This is Cabin in the Woods. You know, like, this is all these other movies that have done this very well. And so like, you're not like blowing my mind. So, because we've seen this, this isn't a new concept. You're just doing the same idea of doing a meta horror movie. Fine, that's okay. Like, I'm down for that. But then, at least do it well. And I just felt like this was probably not the right person to carry that particular torch. I don't know what the metaphor is there. Cake? I don't know. The shoe? You know, but like, you know, like, I feel like that actor, when he was kind of a bit player, was perfect, but you need someone else to swoop in and be the thing. And so when it becomes like, oh, he's the puppeteer behind everything, it's like, nah, that's the guy that would just get punched in the fucking mouth as soon as he came up with this idea, because like, this entire town is on board with this, or it's just like, what, 20 people at least, however many are eating dinner, plus I guess what, his mom or something is the mayor.
Well, mom is the mastermind.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but it's just like, if you look at that fucking sissy weasel and think for a second, you don't go, hey, come here, you shit juggling dirt farmer, I'm gonna fucking whoop you into the ground until you can't breathe, and then bring you back and then kill you a second time. because you were fucking goddamn waste of space and air. Like, that, you don't, there's nothing about him that would allow him to lead. Like, he's not that guy. Like, he doesn't project that aura.
Well, that's kind of what I love about, main girl's reaction to him. Of like,
yes, you know, absolutely.
Because she seems to, on some level, figure that out to some degree, where she goes like, wait just a minute.
Right, but at the same time, I think by the time you get there within the plot of the movie, like, it's so far up its own ass that it kind of loses meaning.
Yeah, I had trouble with that whole reveal to begin with.
Yeah.
And then, like, piecing it back together, like, okay, so there is no cult. It's all actors.
And so you've gotten 40 people to go on to commit multiple murders right. year after year to make your snuff films. How?
Yeah, and so, why? Like, yeah.
What?
Well, like, it's hard to make that switch and then to let go of the movie that I was watching, that I was enjoying.
Yeah.
Because I really wanted to see this be like, well, it's like Wicker Man. Either there is no supernatural and just people can be murderous and that's chilling, or it's ritual, which would be dope as fuck. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't expecting a dude to say like, yeah, the three knights, I'm going to make them the Freddy and Jason and Mike Myers of my... And I was like, oh, god damn.
Well, because that means when they're all sitting at dinner, well, she's literally nailed to a chair. And they're all making fun of her going like, whoa, whenever she moans.
Yeah.
That's craft services.
Yeah, like, what is...
Are you...
A lot of that doesn't really track.
No, it doesn't. Like, and, you know, and we've complain about this, mostly about me complaining about this, of like, you know, complaining about the logic of things, because like, I fucking love act one and two of this movie and most of act three, and all of a sudden it was just like, oh damn it, like, you're gonna make it meta, and like, I don't want this to be meta. I want this to be like, this dude is deranged and making his movie, or I want it to be this town is deranged and they are doing this, he just happens to be filming it because he's a film guy. Like, either of those I would have fucking gone for, but the idea that the only reason it's happening is because he wants to make a movie, that,
because like, we go back and see the trailers where they're all living and where the, like, the little girl who's not a little girl, like, all, yeah, I now that you say it, the idea of like, the townspeople are fucked, this guy is exploiting that to make his little horror movies, and then at the end the actual supernatural thing shows up, like, give me that. Like, right. That seemed fun, but yeah, like, there's a little bit of catharsis in seeing her just like gun down Weasley dude.
She takes him apart verbally.
Yeah,
like, it's fucking awesome how hard,
but then
she is.
Just like wandering into the sea.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
And they're just...
Did you ever read... what is it called? Was it Black Boy? Was the novel? I read it when I was like a sophomore in high school. And like, the main character, the protagonist, like, writes fiction, but he doesn't know how to end his story, so he just has his character walk into the sea. Yeah. And I was just like, watching this going, oh my god, they're doing that ending. I don't know how to end this movie. I'll just make him walk into the sea. And it's like, that's what literally, like, in literary circles, that's known as a way to, like, finish your thing because you don't have an ending. You know, it's a deus ex machina that doesn't require something else showing up. It's something else disappearing.
Can I also add to my list of, like, tropes I'm done with? The making your protagonist pregnant.
Ugh, yeah.
In a way that doesn't have any bearing on the plot. It just makes it extra sad when they die. It's like,
Yep.
What was the one with Ian Holm? Or not Ian Holm. The one with Sylvester McCoy. We watched recently where they just, they're like, yeah, and by the way, she's pregnant. I'm like,
Oh, jeez.
That movie was great, but that bit. Like, that, it just pops up so much. Like,
yeah, if you watch movies, she's going to be pregnant. Sad about someone having their, like, son or daughter die. Remember, everyone that exists on Earth is someone's offspring. So,
and they will come out and play.
Yeah, but I mean, it is no more special if they're 6 or if they're 49. They're all someone's offspring. So,
and fuck you right have to off. Keep them like, separated. Well, you do. Yeah.
You know, hey, 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 mm-hmm. hey, 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 come out and play. The dude, and dude, exactly. And dude. But like, but that's the whole thing. It's like I don't get why we draw the line. Like, it's there's no difference. So.
And it feels manipulative.
It does. But it just, it's a simple, it's a cheap pop, as we call it when we do comedy. You know, what's up, Milwaukee? And they go, way. And it's just like, okay, I know I got mm-hmm. that one.
What's up, Cleveland? Yep. Not much, Peter.
I don't know. Should we put this one to bed?
Yeah, like, I do think this had a decent amount going for it. I so rejected that last act. It's like, I don't give a fuck if some dude isn't trying to make a horror movie by killing people. Like, there's a dozen movies that have that plot. Like, it was so much more interesting, the stuff that was happening with the creepy cultists. And I just did not make that trip with them. They're, you know, sometimes you go with a swerve and sometimes you just like, no, I reject it. I reject it, sir. So this ended up being like I said in the text before the swerve, I would have given it like an 8, maybe even 8.5. And afterwards it drops to like a 3 or a 4. So I'm going to have to tap out at a 5. Just in for my sanity, so we'll say 5 out of 10. I only have eyes for uses.
Yeah, I feel like I had the same problem. It's like I spent the first act being impressed by all the references, and then the second act being absorbed by kind of what was going on, and the additional, like, sometimes very deep cuts for references, and then you hit the point at the second that our antagonist reveals himself and it's just like, yeah, wah, I'm a snuff filmmaker. It's just like, oh, cool, I'm done. We're over here. This sucks. You're bullshit. This is not edgy. You know, because even if you're trying to do that as a meta component, like, I'm over it. Like, I loved a lot of this. In fact, most of this. But, like, there's a point where even if you're being meta, you can just be annoying. Because you've just, like, I don't know. Like, how numb can that, like, meta clit get before we have to move on and do something else? And, like, I feel like this is one where it's just like, nope, dude, you flick the bean all you want. We're just not going to get any more mushrooms out of it. So, yeah. So, I'm going to say, yeah, 2.5. Out of 10, props for watching movies I know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely the high man on the totem pole in this. I liked it just because I liked the idea of like informing the things that felt like it was being, you know, too not accessible, but like too familiar, and like why I was feeling like it was familiar, and I was like, I thought that was pretty clever. You know, certainly agreed that you know, guy who's driving this whole thing just doesn't seem like, you know, he could pee on his own shoes if you pointed him out to him, kind of a guy. But like, it was sort of so that was a little bit of the credulity straining. But at the same time, like, I also like this. I like the idea of a motivation that's sort of like, there's a financial component, but then there's also like this kind of like, just this like, you know, pretty obvious disregard for, you know, humanity. And then in particular, like, for the person that's supposed to be friend, you know, or friendly or whatever else, like, you know, there's something kind of relatable to him being just god awful. So that I kind of liked. And plus, it's just a vicious fucking movie. Like, just that big that big fuck off wood hammer. Like, whoa, goodness gracious. Mm-hmm. That's an ankle breaker. Like, it's like, yeah, Kathy Bates looking at that.
Oh, yeah, the misery callback.
Yeah, yeah. It was like Kathy Bates looks at that and just goes, whoa, like, too much. Too much.
No.
Although, that reminds me of this thing that I saw the other day. Something online was talking like, yeah, being at the doctor. And they said, you know, it's a joke. And they're saying, like, oh, and the doctor, like, and the doctor's like, it's like, okay, now I'm going to test your reflexes. And then it says, and the person says, yeah, dodges the little red knee hammer or else. And the next thing, the doctor's saying, holy shit.
It made me laugh so hard. It was like so stupid, but it was like, you know, the idea of like testing your reflexes, whatever. But so like, that's the kind of stupid thing.
That's fucking funny.
It just really made me laugh. I just thought it was hilarious. But anyways, like, it has not fuck one through that gigantic wood hammer, but it's still, it's hammer related. So, but yeah, I'll be the high man on the totem pole in this. So much of this I clicked it. I thought it was, you know, a solid kind of a deal. And I really want to see what these guys are going to do next, because they seem to be able to handle gore and lighting and blood and like editing really, really well. And so like, I want to see what else they're going to come up with, because they seem like a real talented bunch. I'll be the high man on the totem pole. I'll say 7 out of 10 just because I like it so much. I'm just going to say 7 out of 10 Dumpy Wickerman, because that's the thing that makes, I think it's funny. So Dumpy Wickerman.
Just to be a dork right at the end.
Body here, shaming the Wickerman. Yeah.
If we throw Drew Goddard at this, does it suddenly become like an A+?
I don't know, because I was getting a little tired of the meta thing even when in Cabin in the Woods. I was like, yeah. The whole thing about, you want to see her tits, don't you? Like, you want to suck my dick, don't you? Like, just give me a fucking break. You can't make a movie that shows somebody's boobs and then, like, try to make it also an indictment of people looking at boobs. Like, that's just not how this works.
For sure.
So, you know, like, so in this and, like, in Scream 2, where, like, and Hills Run Red was the other one.
Yeah,
he's like making a horror movie. Yeah. I was trying to think, as soon as we started talking about the hammer scene, I was like, okay, do we go with a please hammer, don't hurt him joke? Do we go with they are really playing with extraordinary mallets joke? I don't know. There's too many ways you can take it.
That tickles a bit.
I'm thinking evil croquet.
That tickles me. It is funny. It is funny about the Hills Run Red thing too, because like if I remember right, I was the low person on that totem pole, because I did not like that movie very much. I mean,
I love that movie.
I admire certain parts of it, but like on the up and up, I did not care for that one.
Now I'm very curious. I'm going to our website and I'm going to look. And when we come back from our break, I'm going to tell you how we rated it. So, but speaking of that break, let's take it. We'll be right back with our movies for next week. So next week we have three movies for you that we are going to watch, and you can watch them too. They are Good Manners, that's on Amazon Prime, The Boy Behind the Doors on Shudder, and Swarm is on Netflix. Our short is called Cloud, and it will be in the show notes. And with that, I will point out that I have been Josh this entire time, and I will say a Baha'i.
This is Matt. Thank you all for listening, sticking with us while we have a few ups and downs during both the pandemic and, to be honest, like some of my mental health issues. So, like, I'm glad you stuck in. So thank you for still being here. We still love doing this. So thank you for sticking around. It means a lot. As far as y'all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie down in Austin. Quick reminder that coming up in let's see, what the fuck month are we in? Well, I guess it's a little bit further out. So we're in August now. At the end of September is Fantastic Fest here in Austin, but they are also doing a virtual version of the festival, and it's going to be kind of an interesting deal. They are going to be doing, during 4 days over the beginning of the festival, they're going to be doing a selection of the programming from this year that'll be available for like on the Friday, they'll have like a handful of them. They'll be available for 2 days. On Saturday, they're going to add more. Those will be available for 2 days, and then Sunday, and then whatever. So they're kind of adding stuff from this year's. They're going to be having a bunch of stuff from this year's festival on there. And then, but then also, then the virtual ticket keeps going, and they're gonna have a like a selection of a bunch of stuff from festivals past. My guess is they haven't committed to this publicly, but my guess is that some of them will be things that you could probably find online in various places, but some of them will probably be things that just never got distributed, and they're still around. And so I'm hoping that there'll be things like El Apostolo, which I love so fucking much. So we'll see what happens there. The virtual ticket's not bad as far as cost. I think it's about $100, so it's not bad as far as that goes. Because the real festival has gotten very, very expensive and just, you know, whatever. But the virtual thing is a thing that looks to be worth the money. So they're selling tickets for it now, and like I said, it'll be end of September, beginning of October. And as we get a little bit closer, as the lineup gets put out. I mean, I already know some of the folks that got some stuff in there, which is really cool. So we'll talk about that again as it comes along. But just keep an eye out for the Fantastic Fest stuff, and to definitely do it from virtually from wherever the hell you are. So with all that, take care of yourselves, take care of each other. Give loved ones an extra hug when you can, and we'll talk to you later. All right, be good. We'll see you later. Bye bye.
Yeah, you haven't lived till you've heard Fred say, "Shiza Minnelli," or
God.
The other one that she does, that she picked up from Up, is says, "Ho ho ho, baby Jesus."
Oh, that's fantastic.
I'm sure that's a hit with the family.
Well, we try to say, like, you know, remember, don't say these things around Nana and Granddaddy, because they believe that Jesus is still alive, and he will come eat your teeth, or whatever.
That's funny.
They're kids. You can tell them whatever bullshit you want.